First, I'd like to thank Kendrick for inviting me here to speak. It's a real pleasure, and I look forward to meeting more of you. It's unfortunate that I have to teach tomorrow, so that's the only reason why I'm not able to stay longer, but I hope to meet as many of you as possible. Today, I'm really excited to talk about much of my latest work, which has involved testing gravity on larger scales using gravitational lensing probes. So gravitational lensing, as you all well know, is one of the few tracers of the matter distribution directly in large scale structure. And so my research group at NYU, we've been working in order to extend that probe out to larger scales. And so I'm excited to talk to you about this today. So my talk will be divided into three parts. So the first part is more of a review specifically of how gravitational lensing can be used in order to constrain gravity, and as well as the work that I've done, my previous work on this topic. And then next, I'm going to talk about two projects, which I actually did with students in my research group. So the first project I'm going to talk about, we look at systematics, specifically the magnification bias of galaxies, which I will explain later. And we'll talk how we identify this systematic, as well as how we remove it, and as well as how we calibrate this from, could potentially calibrate this from future surveys. And my next talk will be work that I did with an undergrad, where we derived an estimator for gravitational lensing of intensity maps, and we derived this for full sky measurements of intensity maps that could be used for surveys that want to map large sky fractions, and so I'll discuss that. So first of all, so there's the cosmic acceleration. We've measured this. We know that this exists. The accelerated cosmic expansion. We've known this for 20 years. And this requires an explanation. Dark energy is one of the main ones we have. So the idea is that the cosmological constant plus GR fits the data. And so the question is, for multiple data between supernovae, measurements of the large-scale structure, specifically baryonic acoustic oscillations and other probes. And so we can say, well, are we done here? Well, no, we're not really done. We need to continue to probe this further and further, but also there are some sort of theoretical questions haven't fully been solved yet for dark energy. One question is, why is lambda so small? This is also known as a hierarchy problem for cosmology, where basically the prediction based on quantum theory for what the cosmological constant should be is about 120 orders of magnitude off. And so we'd like to know, can we explain that? Are there some calculations that happen in the quantum physics that allows this to be so small? Or is there another reason? Or is there an alternative? There's a coincidence problem. Why now? Why is the energy density of the dark energy similar in magnitude to the energy density of matter? This is not something that we expect to just happen. There are theories that people are trying to do in order to consider that, but that's not really fully answered yet. And so, there are some theoretical issues that we may want to consider alternatives. So the alternative for explaining the cosmic acceleration is known as modified gravity. So the idea is that basically that maybe Einstein's theory, although very well tested on solar system scales, may need some corrections on very large scales or the cosmological scales. The main idea of these modified gravity models is that you assume some mechanism that all alters gravity on cosmological scales. It alters the expansion history in order to explain the cosmic acceleration. However, this is science, not religion, so you can't just explain the theory. You have to actually make some prediction to then also confirm this prediction. And so that's why we want to look at signatures in large-scale structure. We have these theories each have predictions for how gravitational interactions should change between. We're both within clusters of galaxies and also between clusters. And so we want to measure those effects as well just in order to explain that. However, the problem is that with modified gravity, there's tons of theories with all different types of motivations behind them, some particle physics, some extra dimensions, and different kinds of motivations. And so there's a whole sea of theories that propagate out into infinity. And so the question is, which of these theories work? And so that's one of the main problems. So, which is and then that continues to be explored. However, so the thing is also too, so there's dark energy and modified gravity. There are these alternative explanations for the cosmic acceleration. If you just look at the expansion history alone, you're not really going to get have enough information to be able to distinguish between the two. And so you need alternative probes. And one of the main probes that people look at is the growth of structure. So if you look at both the expansion history, which is governed by gravity, as well as the interaction or the clustering of galaxies, which is also governed by gravity, the idea is that assuming gravity comes from one theory that should explain both phenomena, then you should be able to distinguish between the two. Dark energy modified gravity. So one parameter that's also measured is the growth rate. So this is basically measuring how fast matter perturbations grow, and that is and that combined with the expansion history can be a way to break this degeneracy. Also, two main probes that govern measuring growth of structure and expansion history, and so that's redshift space distortions, which measures the growth of structure through measuring the velocities of galaxies, separate from the cosmic expansion. Which is governed by gravity, as well as gravitational lensing, which I'm going to talk about a lot today, and which is giving perturbations to the direction of light due to gravity. So in 2007, Pengjing Zhang constructed an estimator called EG, which aims to probe this effect. This is constructed from gravitational potentials, which are on the numerator of the statistic EG, and the growth rate, which is at the bottom. This is just a matter over density. And the idea is that this is an estimator that in GR has a specific prediction that's a function of redshift only. Whereas for modified gravity models, these parameters also change in such a way that there will be that they'll be altered, but more strongly, F is usually become scale dependent on very large scales. And so this in modified gravity models, and that can give this EG some scale dependence. And so when you measure this, the goal is to actually, first of all, see if there's a prediction by GR, but more importantly, to see if there's some scale dependence to EG that could actually, that would actually be more of a, on large scales, that would be more of a smoking gun for modified gravity. It's specific in order to measure this numerator, the main effect that we looked at is gravitational lensing. So gravitational lensing is just, there's multiple types of gravitational lensing. In this talk, I'm going to be concerned with gravitational lensing of the cosmic microwave background, or the CMB. And gravitational lensing of CMB, the CMB photons are actually lensed by the intervening matter all the way from the last scattering surface to today. And the idea is that this is, and then because of the deflections here, that we can actually measure in CMB maps, we've started to get the first measurements of this with WMAP, but we really were able to see this strongly with Planck out to getting measurements of around 40 sigma, and that will only improve as new CMB probes are built. And the idea is that these lensing convergence can then be. By measuring these deflections in the CMB maps, you can then reconstruct the lensing field from that. And so the cool thing about the CMB in particular, using as a lensing probe, is that it has a well-defined source plane. We know what the redshift is, and this is unlike other probes such as galaxy lensing, which tend to use photometric galaxies, which are more uncertain in redshift. Also, too, unlike galaxy lensing, there's no intrinsic alignment. So the shapes of galaxies are influenced by tidal forces, and those could actually mimic the effect, what you would expect to see for gravitational lensing. Whereas CMB, the relevant intrinsic alignment would be non-Gaussianity, but it looks like for based on measurements from Planck, it's really small. There is still more constraints to go, of course, as far as answering questions about inflation, but as far as gravitational lensing is concerned, it's well enough that at least on small scale, at least on the measurements we see today, it can be neglected. And so that's very useful. You don't see strong effects. And yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Go for it. Yeah. And feel free to ask questions.
So can you go back to the EG? So why is the numerator not zero?
It depends on the convention. So some conventions have the metric perturbations equal. Oh. Some have an opposite. In this convention, they're opposite.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, and so really we were, I had a paper, I guess 5 years ago or so, that was the first to actually, well, a few years ago, that was the first to actually do forecasts and formalism for the CMB lensing used as an EG probe. And also, not long after that, we extracted the first measurement of EG using using measurements we had. Basically, we used Planck maps of CMB as well as cross-correlated with galaxies from the BOSS survey. And so we were able to measure EG in 11 bins all the way out to 150 megaparsecs. And we used jackknives and mocks in order to measure the errors. And so this was the first measurement we had to be able to use CMB, and we extended to much higher redshifts and was able to be done with galaxy lensing. And so this is something I was excited about. What's interesting is that we were able to see an effect at large scales that was different from the expected effect of the expected value for GR. However, these points I'm not as sure about today because there could have been problems with estimating the jackknives that underestimated the error bars. And so that's something that we won't know until we measure things at higher redshifts.
So, yes. So this is by cross-correlating the lensing maps and galaxy maps?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So how is F estimated here?
So F is estimated using a Landy's delay estimator for the correlation function of the galaxies, which then the monopoles, the monopole and quadrupole were fit in order to. No, it was more complicated. It's a simple way to do that, but actually it was. So this is using the same methods that were used for the BOSS survey to measure the growth rate.
Remind me, that's all right.
So.
I guess we're getting
close. Yeah, so the Delmec approximation was made in order to fit the correlation function, including effects, nonlinear effects of the growth, like the fingers of God. So all those were included here.
Of the same galaxies that were used in the cross correlation.
Yes, which means we had to we used both jackknives and mocks to try to make sure we got the error bars as well as we could. It's possible, particularly for the jackknives, that because we were looking at such larger scales, we were kind of limited in estimating the error bars. So, this is still a question. It may be that these were right. We're just not sure. But definitely, measuring one of the projects I'm actually working on now is actually predicting these error bars more accurately. And as we go to higher redshifts, we'll be able to do a better job of estimating error bars for these scales.
So what redshift is this at?
So this is a redshift of 0.5. And these are some predictions that we made for what can be done with future surveys. So this is, so the x-axis is redshift, the y-axis is EG. This was averaged over scale. So this is not quite fully the total measurement, which I'm at the end of the talk I'll discuss later how we're going to improve EG statistic, but this is predicted for galaxies from DESI and CMB from both Planck and Advanced ACT, which are different colors that you see right here. And so we see that as we go to a higher number densities of galaxies, you're going to be able to sample much better the statistic. So now I'll discuss work that my research group at NYU is doing to further this project. So the first of the two projects I'm going to discuss is calibrating magnification bias from the EG statistic. So this is work that I did that my graduate student Shengxi Yang led. She's very brilliant. She's a third-year graduate student, and she really led this work and was able to find these results well. So first of all, what is magnification bias? Well, the idea is that the cross correlations of galaxies with lensing is all well and good if the galaxies themselves are not lensed. So if the galaxy distribution we see is the true distribution at the locations of the galaxies, then everything is good. But unfortunately, there are actually two effects that are together distort the galaxy lensing field that we normally use to do correlations in large scale structure. That could actually bias EG. So one of these is volume perturbations. The idea of volume perturbations is that if they're not lensed, let's say they were two pixels or two cells, whatever you want to call them. And the idea is that you have some galaxies between them, but if you have some strong lens between these galaxies and you, that lens could actually, the cells that you look at are actually going to be distorted views of what the perturbations actually in at the location that the galaxies are. And so let's say this one gets bigger and this one gets smaller and such that then the densities in the two cells actually just get distorted. And so that could actually cause an effect where the matter, the galaxy, the perturbations of the galaxy distribution is actually actually affected by kappa, where kappa is a measure of the lensing called the convergence. Okay? Another effect that can affect this is selection bias. The idea is that each galaxy survey has some minimal flux limit where you can detect galaxies and put them in and use them to construct your maps. But unfortunately, what happens is that you can actually get a situation where galaxies, because of lensing, can actually be either if you have a convergence and the galaxies gain such that the galaxies that are originally under the limit get over. If you have an under density, the opposite effect can happen. But the problem is that because of this, selection bias, you actually can look it can appear as if you have more higher density than there really should be. And it causes this effect where S here is called is a magnification bias parameter. And basically what it just describes is it describes sort of a distribution of the galaxies with respect to luminosities. So the problem is that this effect can actually bias cross correlations between the convergence map from, let's say, the CMB or even from some high redshift galaxies, due to the foreground galaxies between the galaxies and you. And so this can actually bias measurements of cross correlations. So you can see here there's this big effect where, particularly if your bias is, so this is an example where the bias was one and there was no specific magnification bias, so all this effect is just from volume perturbations. And this is at redshift, at the x-axis is your angular scales, where these are large scales and these are small scales. And this is the percent diffractional effect. So there, the fractional effect is small, it's on the range of sort of a few percent. Whereas for a high redshift, redshift 1.5, let's say this is what you normally want to look at for upcoming surveys, this is actually a big effect. Now you're seeing effects on the order of 40% or even higher. And so this is something that you wouldn't want to happen. So I should say that this work was originally identified, it's been put in here by Zeta, Zeta, who is a postdoc at CFA, who first identified this, and this was a strong influence, and it seemed like this may kill EG. However, what we found was that actually this effect was really sensitive to the bias and the magnification parameter used. And so here we have different choices of what these parameters could be, and what we found was that for example, here, this prediction, we see this is large at redshifts 0.5, but then when you increase the bias from 1 to 2, the effect goes down precipitously. And particularly if the S is around 0.4, it actually cancels out. It's because the volume and the selection bias effects actually cancel each other out. And so you see a similar effect happen at redshift 1.5 as well. It goes down precipitously. And so really, this shift in EG, fractional percent shift in EG is actually related to this factor in front. And so for LRGs and for quasars, it actually cancels out really well, because for either low redshift galaxies or high redshift quasars, which quasars come from really dense gravitational fields, the bias is actually really, really large. And so around order of 2 for galaxies or order of 3 for 3 or 3.5 for quasars. And so that could really lower this effect. Whereas for ELGs, sort of like the galaxies that will be detected by Euclid, DESI, WFIRST, those actually, then you have lower clustering biases. And so that could actually, so this actually is more of an issue. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to determine a mechanism for actually subtracting out this effect. And so the way we did that was we knew that if we took the CMB cross-correlations with galaxies, the CMB convergence cross-correlated with galaxies, then this should be proportional to we knew that the bias to this is actually proportional to the convergence in the galaxy map versus the convergence of foreground galaxies, where this is the, this kappa G is the lensing from foreground galaxies. And so the idea is that we made sort of an entente where we sort of said, well, what if the convergence of the galaxies, it says they're the same lenses for the most part. What if the convergence of the galaxies were about the same as the CMB? And so obviously this is not truly a strictly correct, but we figured that it might be close enough to where we can build a calibration method with this. And so basically what we did was we constructed a calibration measure. Was the idea is that we take the measurement of CL kappa kappa, this is the kappa kappa from the CMB, and we use it to construct estimates of what the bias terms in here would be. The idea is that if we make theoretical, these quantities, strictly speaking, will be proportional, could be proportional to each other to some degree. And then the idea is that we use theory in order to predict what those proportionality constants are, and then use that in order to build, make predictions for what the bias terms are that then subtract out. Strictly speaking, though, you'd want to necessarily make some tests in order to see if this is something you can actually do, particularly at upcoming surveys where these things should be really sensitive to each other. So what we did was we constructed some simple simulations, not in-body or anything like that, but just some simple ones where we constructed correlated kappa and galaxy maps, which would then output these power spectra, the cost correlations, and the autocorrelations with the two fields. And the idea is that, again, we use theory predictions in order to build a way to calibrate these bias terms from CL kappa kappa, and then see if we remove them. And the idea is that, and in the simulations, we put these things in, and then we test how much of the bias we can actually remove by treating in these simulations. And the idea is that we see what the EG difference, how much bias is removed when we add these calibrations in compared to when we don't have the calibrations. We used 100 sims, which 100 sims is good enough to where the errors are much smaller than the calibrations differences that we're looking at. And what we found was that this seemed to work really well. This is a prediction for, it would be where the black line shows the input EG value, the red points are what the bias would be if you did no calibration, and then the blue lines are basically the average of what we got after we did the calibration. As you see, this looks pretty well. So this was an example. If you have EOGs from the DESI survey cross-correlated with Advanced ACT, which is the next generation CMB survey on the ground, and LSS, which is going to map around, supposed to map around half the sky, and this effect was if you actually use photometric galaxies in order to measure this effect. And so you see, it seems to work pretty well. Although one question you may have about this is, well, it seems to work pretty well, but what if you're using theory to calibrate this? What if you don't know the theory accurately? That's something that you might want to test as well. So how sensitive is this the parameters that you put in? And so we actually looked at this, and what we found was that for most theoretical parameters, we actually did pretty well. So this is not all the things we tested, but this is a sampling, where what we did was we looked at, say, well, what if you change the magnification bias parameter you assume? And what we found was that when you do the calibration, the way we did this was basically we said we put in a true, we in our simulation this time, we put in a parameter, but then we assumed in the calibration that the parameter was something else. Like maybe it was like 1% off or 5% off or 10% off, and we saw how the calibration would perform if you were misestimating the parameter, okay? And so when we did that, we saw for most parameters, it actually still worked really well. So these were cases where this magnification bias parameter was 5% off or 10% off, and it still worked really well. This is a case where the assumed bias we assumed was 10% off, and it still worked really well. This is a case where it didn't work as well. So specifically, what we found was that if you misestimate the redshift distribution, either where the average the midpoint in the redshift distribution is, or the width of the redshift distribution, if you misestimate those are actually really sensitive to this calibration effort. So if you're going to use this, what you would need to do in future surveys is you need to be able to measure redshift distributions really accurately on a less than, definitely in the order of a few percent in order to make sure these are accurate. Well, of course, one strategy is, of course, to to try to look at, to try to actually use maybe spectroscopic, maybe deeper surveys in order to, in smaller areas, and use those to really get the redshift distributions very accurately in order to, and very precisely in order to then expand out to the larger survey. Okay. So there's some future things I'm thinking about in order to extend this work further. So magnification bias isn't the only systematic that's going to affect this. One is, of course, if you run the test GR, Lambda CDM isn't the only dark energy model. So there's also quintessence, where the dark gradient of state is varying with redshift. And so we'd want to see if that could work as well with how that would actually affect the EG estimator. Also, too, if there's curvature, if it turns out that the universe is closed, for example, we may want to look at that. And so there's also some effects as well. So particularly one thing I'm actually working on a lot right now, specifically right now, is seeing if we can improve the statistic of EG using MOCS. Because EG, because it's a ratio, it's not going to be Gaussian. And so we really want to see how basically forecasts and estimates work well, how those actually work most optimally if you have a non-Gaussian EG. And so this is something where I'm working on with a student right now to improve that. How am I doing on time?
I have a clock right there.
Oh, there's a clock right there? Okay. Oh, they're doing pretty good, actually. Actually, might be ahead of time. Okay, but yeah, go ahead.
Do you have an intuition why it works well to approximate kappa G by kappa C and B given the breadth of the lensing kernel?
I should have had an extra slide on this, but basically, if you look at the form of the integral, it's similar. Also, too, for the C and B, most of the lensing happens at redshift 2. Obviously the galaxies themselves are not lensed by redshift 2 galaxies because most of them are, can't get lensed by things that are behind you. But the idea is that you're at a particular regime where the cosmology doesn't vary so much, and so you can use this. The thing is that you see that if you misidentify the redshift distribution, it doesn't work as well, which is probably because the idea is that at that point, the distribution of the properties of the galaxies themselves, like where the shape that they are, is going to strongly affect what the CO kappa G and CO GG are. And so, if you don't know that, you're going to really misestimate those parameters that define the calibration.
But are you scaling kappa CMB by the expected kappa for the galaxy's redshift? Is that why it's working that well?
Say it again.
So you're rescaling kappa G,
Kappa.
Do you rescale the CMB-derived kappa for the galaxy's redshift because it's a lower lensing efficiency?
Mm-hmm. So we take the, exactly. We rescale them, but it's totally to the theory. Like we literally take the ratio of each of the quantities at the same scale, and the idea is that we just multiply it directly. So it's really simple. And
if you're just multiplying kappa CMB by like the ratio of
That's effectively what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm puzzled then why the S parameter and the other parameter don't matter so much. It's not your plot, right? This plot, right? So your lower right, lower left channel. So that's this S parameter, which is like the slope of the luminosity function, I guess.
Yeah, the slope of the luminosity function. Yeah.
So base corresponds to making no correction at all. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Base means you exactly know what the magnification bias parameter is. That what the S is. You know it exactly. Like what you think it is is what it actually is in nature. That's what base is.
Oh.
And So the point of this is that what you're seeing is if we what each of these are is saying if what we think S is actually like, for example, 5% off from what it really is, then what will we estimate EG to be?
Like, so your red and yellow points, I guess, correspond to 10% errors.
Exactly, red and yellow.
And it looks like doing so makes no effect at all, is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. Remember, this is also as additive to the volume perturbation itself. And so the idea is that the idea is that you have like 5 minus 2s. So if it's a small effect, if it's still added by 5, the idea is that if the s is small and it's added to 5, then it's not going to really affect things.
So what are the 2 sets of points you have? You have 2 sets of points, the lower ones around 0.34 and then upper ones around 0.35, I guess. Yeah, so what are the differences between those?
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Wait, which, this one? Sorry.
Yeah, just in the plot itself, you have like a row of points.
Oh, right, so this is when you don't calibrate.
If it's if you don't calibrate.
Yeah, and these points are once you calibrate. Okay.
Okay. So if you made like 100% error on S,
well, this is not 100% error, obviously, but yeah.
But if you did, that would correspond to that lower set of points? Is that what that means?
No, the lower set of points is just not calibrated. So even if you know what S is, if you don't calibrate it, it's going to be off, right? This point is the magnification bias has not been removed.
Yeah, exactly. And so if I made like 100% error on S, shouldn't that be sort of like not?
I mean, I guess it depends. So, no, it's not. It's not the same as that. So if if S is 0.4 and you if S is 0.2 and you thought it was actually 0.4 or 0, it would still be.
So if I thought it was 0, that isn't like making no correction.
No, because you still making no correction isn't the same as being 100% off in the parameters. If S is, the error itself is still going to be there. It's going to be there if you make no correction. I don't know if I'm explaining.
Okay.
Yeah, that's obvious. Okay, we can talk about it more later. Okay. Okay. So in summary, what we found, well, I guess we talked about this more in, well, okay. So in summary, we wanted to look at how magnification bias would affect this, and so we were able to construct a calibration method that seems to work pretty well, and in the cases that we don't, we can have strategies for improving it. So this is the second topic of project I want to talk about today. So this is a different topic. This is looking at intensity mapping and specifically weak lensing of intensity maps. This is going to be connected to gravity in the sense that this can be a probe of gravity as well. And so even with EG, which is a work that was done by Arkistis Portsidou at Portsmouth, postdoc there. And so, but the idea is that we wanted to extend weak lensing to a full sky intensity mapping surface, which hasn't been done before. And so this is work I was excited to do with Priyash Chakraborty, who's a math major undergraduate at NYU. So first of all, for those of you who don't know, so line intensity mapping is the idea that you use instead of looking at individual galaxies and pinpointing their locations, you instead map the total emission of galaxies from unresolved galaxies in a galactic medium. And so the idea is that you can look both along on the sky as well as looking out at different redshifts along the line of sight, and then you can measure 3D distributions of the matter distribution using intensity mapping. And the idea is that the useful thing about this is that you can by using this type of measurements, you can actually detect emission from sources that are too faint to be detected from traditional galaxy surveys, and so you can go to much higher distances. You can also intensity mapping, since you're not staring at individual galaxies for long periods of time, you can also map much larger sky areas, which, of course, much larger sky areas plus larger distances means you're going to get a much larger volumes. And if you can map much larger volumes, then that really opens up a new window into cosmology that hasn't been accessed before by galaxy surveys. And so this is something I've been very excited to be a part of. So I have many works on this, some of them not at all related to what I'm talking about today. So I've done work with looking at emissions of C2, emissions of CO and how that can be used to map as well as Lyman alpha. And so if you're interested in those kind of things, please talk to me. But what I want to work on today is a situation where you're looking at where you want to do maps of intensity mappings over large areas. So specifically, most work that's done with intensity mapping uses an approximation called the plane parallel or flat sky limit, where you basically have a source that is over a small area in the sky. And so and when it's over a small area of the sky, you can define specifically what your line of sight is. So if it's if this is your area on the sky, then you can say, well, this point is my line of sight, and any other pixels on this in this area will define the angle that position is relative to my line of sight. Okay? And so in this case, you can and it's called flat sky because then you can basically assume that the source is flat on the sky. Like all the line of sight of each point on here is the same direction. However, this is something that was also assumed for a while with CMB surveys, but we've known that's not true, and particularly ever since Kobe, we've had to find ways in order to prove this. Because for a full sky survey or even a large area survey, even if it's not the whole sphere, if it's a large fraction of the sphere, we really can't assume that this is flat. Where this is some part of some larger area, which if it's just this area, you can approximately say the line of sight is one direction. But really, if you're looking at, let's say, half the sky, half the sky, then you really can't define one line of sight. Like each point on here, the line of sight really is different. And if you talk about correlations where you're correlating this point here with this point here, there's no reason to say that this is one line of sight. And so what we want to look at is, and if you, in fact, plow ahead and just do that anywhere, you're going to get distortions. And this is going to cause problems when you try to estimate correlations in order to do cosmology. So there was an alternative basis that was constructed for this purpose, not just for intensity maps, but for it started for galaxy surveys, specifically known as a spherical Fourier Bessel transform. And so the idea is that you can take your map, which is denoted by T here, and do two transformations. So you do a transformation. You do a spherical harmonic transform on the sky, then for k's, you actually do another transform, a spherical Bessel transform. And so you combine those two together to get a new set of modes. And the cool thing is that these modes actually treat the sky correctly. There are, of course, alternatives, but this is the one I'm going to focus on here in this talk. And so the idea is that you can, and the cool thing about this is that when you take the covariance of these moments, if you have an infinite volume, you actually get directly the power spectrum, which is cool. So normally, when you look at a 2D sphere, you'll get some CL, which is a line of sight integration of the power spectrum. Whereas in 3D, you actually get the power spectrum. And so this is cool, where they see the moments are uncorrelated, particularly between different LMs and K modes. This picture only really works if you have an infinite volume, which of course we'll never have. Normally, if you have like a region like a bounded sphere, what's going to happen is that your angular modes are still going to be uncorrelated, but your k modes are actually only going to be uncorrelated if the k's have specific values. Specifically, if you pick your k's such that there are zeros of the spherical Bessel function. If you just pick a random set of k's that are, let's say, evenly spaced apart or logarithmically spaced apart, then you're going to have covariances between k's. But this is one way, if you have k's that are zeros of the spherical Bessel function, then they can actually be uncorrelated again. So just to sort of see where all this is in the big picture, if you take a map of the sky in two dimensions, of like, let's say, just a two-dimensional sphere, you take a spherical harmonic transform, you get TLMs, which, of course, all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. On the flat sky, it looks like this, where you have theta, and you have your thetas, and if you're looking at a small sky area, you can take the plane parallel transform in order to get TL, where these theta and L are vectors on a small patch of the two sphere. In three dimensions, you're gonna your parameters are gonna be now theta, but then also an r, because now you're gonna be able to see every sphere as a function of its radius, because you're looking at three dimensions. And so when you do that and you take the plane parallel transform, you actually get something where this is the angle on the sky, and then along the line of sight, you have k parallel, which is your parameter for the third dimension. And then for our case, we'll be looking at the spherical Fourier Bessel transform. When you transform these on a sphere, and on a sphere, on a full free sphere, you actually get these moments. And so the idea is that this is where all this fits in, and sort of whether you take two dimensions or three dimensions, and whether you take full sky or flat sky. So the cool thing, again, about using the spherical Bessel transform is that you can measure 3D correlations over the full sky. This is really thought about a lot in terms of galaxy surveys and galaxy weak lensing. There has been work looking at this specifically for, this is sort of becoming in vogue to see this. This has started to be used in data, but not such a large scale, although this is going to be more important as we get to surveys like Euclid, which is going to look at half the sky. You're going to want to think about using these looking at these wide angle effects. And so particularly for large scale cosmology, this is sort of the avenue that people have been thinking about. And again, there are also other alternatives to this basis, but again, this is one of the ones that people are looking at. So now, for this part of the talk, I want to talk about weak lensing of intensity maps. So the idea is that intensity maps, just like CMB maps or galaxy maps, are also lensed by galaxies in between, by galaxies and dark matter halos in between the source and us. So the idea is that as these rays, but the cool thing is that these rays or intensity maps are coming from different sources, which all then combine. And the idea is that each of these sources let's say if your lens is here, all these sources are being lensed by the same lens. And so when you do that, that means that gives you more and more data, which you can use to reconstruct what the lensing potential is. With the CMB, you only have one source plane. Whereas with intensity map, you can have tens or even hundreds of source planes that you can use to try to reconstruct what the lens is. And so that allows potentially a very powerful probe of large scale structure. Also too, another advantage of intensity map over CMB is that there's no silk damping in intensity map. So in CMB, you have silk damping at small angular scales, which reduces the power you can use in order to see the lensing happening in the CMB. Whereas intensity mapping, you can use the lensing power at much, much smaller scales, all the way out to the Jeans length of the gas, and so that allows you to have more power. Now the thing is that one disadvantage is that the intensity maps, unlike the CMB, is non-Gaussian, if nothing else, due to nonlinear clustering. However, there are ways to mitigate this effect. So recent work by Simon Forman looked at constructing what's known as bias-hardened estimators in order to minimize this effect. So the idea is that if you have an intensity map, this intensity map is going to be lensed, which we noticed by I twiddle, and the perturbation, the distortion to the lens map is given by this, where this phi is the lens potential, and this basically describes the intensity map itself. Now this map, these estimators were first, well, people have been thinking about this for a long time. They were first derived in the current form by Oliver Zahn and Matias Zaldarraga in 2006, and those estimators have been used ever since. But they use a plane parallel approximation. And so you really can't apply these to large areas. And so what we wanted to do was we reworked on constructing, me and my student, weak lensing estimators for actually taking the full sky. And so what we did was we first had to derive in this spherical Fourier Bessel, transform, what the correlations in the intensity maps, the lens intensity maps will be. And so we were able to construct this formalism, which is in form similar to what you find for the full sky CMB analysis. And so you have here is your moments of the lensing potential. And here is a term F, where this is your Wigner 3J symbol. And what it does is connects various L and M modes, which you have to take to account for if you're looking at a sphere. And this is a parameter that actually connects different L's and K modes. So the thing is that this also depends on the amount of power itself that exists in the in the perturbations. And so what we do is we actually invert, we take this and we're able to derive an inversion for this equation that allows you to find what phi is in terms of the correlations. And then we use that in order to there's a whole family of equations that would actually satisfy the inversion. So what we have to do is we want to find the ones that are actually optimal, and that allows you to give a minimum variance estimate of what the lensing potential is. And so we were able to derive that, and then find what the what the noise is. And so we were able to find, and this is the expression that we were able to derive, which looks in form, again, similar to the expression that you get for the CMB. But you notice that now you have to, instead of just adding over L modes, you actually have to add over K modes as well. And so that's what we were able to do. And we wanted to test to see what the magnitude of this effect is. And so what we considered, we didn't consider SKA because SKA is going to, it's going to have relatively small areas, and so this won't really be useful for that. And so what we considered was the Hyrax survey, which is a low redshift 21 centimeter survey. It's going to look at, it's going to map, this goal is to map the southern hemisphere. It's going to use 5 years of, it's going to map this over 5 years at half time. It consists of a compact array, so the dishes are pretty much touching each other. And there's a compact array of 32 members on a side of 6 meter dishes with a resolution of around, it varies, but the resolution is about 7 arc minutes. And so also the frequency range of this is between 400 and 800 megahertz, which corresponds to 21 centimeter maps of redshifts between 0.8 and 2.5. And so this is, and with this kind of array, you can actually get, you can actually map large areas. And so this is what we wanted to look at. And so what we find is actually a pretty significant effect. So this x-axis is L, your angular scale, and your y-axis is CO, it's basically your CO55, where the blue line is what the signal for the lens autocorrelation should be, and this the orange line is the prediction from the plane parallel, formalism, and this green line is what we got for our formalism. And so as you see, as expected, they agree on small scales, but at large scales, you see this big difference. And so this is where we, and so at the largest scales, it deviates by almost a factor, by more over a factor of 10. And so if you're gonna actually use lensing for large scales, you'd really wanna use this type of, you really would not wanna use a plane parallel approximation according to our work. So this has been really exciting. We also wanted to see how this affects cosmological constraints. So we made a prediction then for what the error in CL would be based on the noise per mode that we derived earlier. And so what we predicted was that basically if your measurement uses modes at all L, equally, then it's not going to get so big of an effect. You're only going to get an effect of about 13% reduction in your signal to noise, or 13% increase in your signal to noise. But let's say you're looking at something that really only depends on the larger scales, then you can get an increase in the signal to noise on order of 150%. And so that would be really good for if you're measuring things on large scales. So one example is around 2005, Chris Sigurdsson and company had the idea of maybe you could use intensity maps, lensing of intensity maps, in order to construct the lensing to then apply to de-lens B modes. So B mode. In the CMB, we know that the B modes can come both from the gravitational waves from inflation, which that's what we want to find, but they're also lensed by the E modes can be lensed in order to turn into B modes, and so we'd want to be able to de-lens B modes to remove those in order to basically increase the signal from the intensity maps. And so the idea is that one of the bumps, there's a lower bump at L less than 10 due to both reionization and the inflationary gravitational waves. And so those exist mainly at L less than 10. And so this would be, and so if you're going to go after those modes, you definitely want to use an estimate, you're basically going to use a coordinate construct that actually takes into account the full sky. And so this would be very useful for that. Also, too, if you're going to look at growth, measure growth on large scales, you'd also want to consider this. So then the next step we want to do, yes?
Sorry, before you go on, sure. What's the total SNR? It's like even that low.
Right, so, for this, it is low. So it depends on the survey. So this was in a small redshift window with these constructed. So for the whole for a larger window, let's say if you want to look at redshifts between 1 and 2.2, for higher axis, it should increase by about a factor of 3, the signal to noise. At this level, it's still low. Plus, we also didn't take into account bias hardening, which would lower the signal to noise more we predicted, because we were just trying to compare different estimators. We weren't necessarily trying to predict the actual signal noise. That's why I'm not even really putting them on the slides. But I would expect that for CL55, as these predicted from Simon Forman, you probably wouldn't be able to detect it. The signal to noises are around order of is less than 1. With cross correlations, you do get much higher signal to noises. Like if you cross correlate with galaxies from, let's say, LSST, it's on the order of 20 for this higher X. And then of course future surveys should be do even better than 20 to 30. And so actually one thing that we're still working on is actually predicting what the effect is would be for the cross correlation. We actually haven't nailed that down yet. So we're finishing that paper up right now. So that's the thing we're trying to work on. Let's see it. So last thing I wanted to mention is just the future work I want to do with this. So with this case, we're still looking at two-dimensional lensing. So the idea is that what we did specifically, even though we're using data from three dimensions, we assume that the lens is the same at all redshifts. And we're just using all those modes in order to measure it, all those redshifts. But in fact, the phi should be a three-dimensional field. The idea that each source will experience a different amount of lens, because as the source plane gets closer to you, lenses that are close to the source plane will get cut off, and so your lens should change. And so that's something that you may actually want to measure the effect of. And so here you can actually construct a convergence and find the spherical Fourier Bessel modes in order to do this. Since this is something that we've already derived, that it should look something like this, where you have some window function that connects K modes to K prime modes in the actual density field. And so what we find is that, what we do is, if you can actually look at this further and take a cross correlation with, let's say, galaxies, it actually turns out that these two are proportional to each other. And so if you really wanted to sample this, you could actually measure this first and then just average over K prime modes in order to get this. And so that would be, and that's something that you could actually try to do, we hope. And so our next project I want to do is to see if we could actually use this to estimate EG in a better way. The idea is that, remember, before, we want to look at the scale dependence of EG. The actual estimators that we've been using in our analysis, both myself and others have been using analysis, actually average over scale. So you really don't get the full power of EG. So what I want to do is actually construct an EG estimator that actually looks at the scale dependence of the growth along with other things. And so you'd be able to then really search for that scale dependence from GR, from modified gravity models that would be a smoking gun. And so, this is a kind of an estimator that you can actually try to pull off. One thing about this, one complication is that and for 3D lensing, so this is something that's been considered for galaxy surveys already by Castro et al. And so we're wanting to consider this for intensity maps. Now, one problem with this is that the different modes will be correlated with each other in a much stronger way. So the phi LM modes in the 2D case that I just talked about earlier, that one, all the phi LM modes are not correlated. But in this case, they would definitely be correlated with different K modes. And so decorrelating that would be the main challenge. And so, but that's something that I'd want to work on. And so that would be, and so if we were able to accomplish that, that could be a new exciting probe to constrain gravity. So in summary, for this project, intensity maps, some of the ones that are going to be constructed are for Hyrax as well as from Chime. Chime, which is based in Canada, is going to look at very large areas. We're going to probe pretty much about half the sky. And so we're going to want to use coordinates that actually do not get distorted when you look at full sky surveys. And so spherical for Bessel transport coordinates is a way to do that. It's one way to do that. And then for particularly if you apply this to weak lensing, you can improve, you can greatly improve your signal noise at very large scales. And that could help in doing probes of both inflation as well as gravity. And so something that I read, and so I'm really excited to. So this paper is something that we're just finishing up now. It should be, we're going to submit it in the next couple weeks or so. And we hope to, this really helps improve, accelerate the field. So in conclusion, so in this talk, I talked about the idea of an introduction for lensing constraints on gravity. And so these were two projects that we worked on in our group, but there's more to come. Really excited about, again, increasing the reach of this field in order to let us know more about the real phenomenon of gravity and how that applies on a very large scale. Thank you. Yes.
So, in your formula for Lima approximation, did you have L or L plus 1/2?
So, let me just say that I did. yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a difference. But actually, do have a prediction for the full sky. But right now, I'm trying to improve that calculation. But basically, at the larger scales, it actually goes down.
No, so
these two don't use the Lima approximation. This uses the flat sky and this uses the full sky. So this doesn't use this uses the full, yeah. Also, yeah. So it uses the total full sky. It doesn't assume anything. It does, at least as far as L.
So if you use flat sky, then you are using a Lima approximation of some sort, right?
Sort of. They're not the same. So not strictly speaking. The way to think about it is for the flat sky, for the Lima approximation, what it's doing is it's saying if you have a very broad redshift distribution, you can actually connect the modes, the K and L modes more easily. Whereas the flat sky is really about taking into account sphericity, and so those tend to both happen at small scales, and so they tend to be conflated, but it's not exactly.
So there's a signal here, which is just a lensing of the intensity maps, but then the noise is, what is the noise here?
So the noise is, so per phi mode, so per L and M mode and phi, this is what the noise is of that individual mode.
What is the nature, what is the origin of the noise, I guess
So the origin of that mode is because really lensing is a, particularly for CL55, is a four-point function. And so even if your density modes are fully Gaussian due to no lensing, you would still have some bias in your noise.
So just because. I guess the product of two-point functions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting because, so for the CMB, for example, the effect actually to full sky is actually on order of 10%. So it's really surprising to see.
I guess I just to elaborate on that point. So I think you are using a Lima approximation to calculate your noise. When you say flat sky, that's the limit of Lima approximation. But then it actually makes a difference if you put L or L plus 1/2 because it changes the accuracy from order 1 over L squared to order 1 over L.
Yeah.
So that makes it basically error much bigger. That's if you use L instead of L plus 1/2. And that's, I suspect that might be responsible. If you just replace L with L plus 1/2 in your formulas, that difference between green and orange would become much smaller.
No, I mean, again, this is not, there really are two different approximations, but, this is the case where you go from, instead of having L and M's, you really use the L vector.
Right. That's my point. So the Planck paradigm is a vector, K, right? to go from K to N, you say basically K is N over R. But if you say K is N plus 1/2 over R, that makes it much more precise. If I understand correctly, that's
what
it is. So K parallel, there are K vectors.
Well, yeah, so it's like a K parallel and then K perpendicular, which can also be described as L over R, right?
And how do you go from K perpendicular to L? I assume it
So those are two different coordinates. They're not the same. So the K parallel, so in the plane parallel, they're treated as separate coordinates. So the K parallel describes the correlations along the line of sight, with the L is describing the correlations on the angle. On the sky. And so those are treated.
Right, but K perpendicular is related to L, right?
Yes, that's true, yeah.
How is it related?
So K perpendicular equals L over R.
Good.
L plus one, yeah, so right, you could do this if you made the L's equal L plus one, but I mean, this is not large enough to make this go away. I mean, this would, maybe it'll bring down somewhat, but it wouldn't make it go down.
I said you wrote the paper about this.
Okay.
But that is boring.
Okay. Yes?
So for the CG statistic, you showed this linear models. Are there particular models that give this effect? And if, for those models, are these things like, we detect or constrain EG, do we actually significantly reduce the model space?
Potentially, although that's not really my concern, because I'm just concerned about trying to see if you could disprove gravity, see if you could disprove GR. But I mean, there are other models you can try. One of the things on my docket has always been to sort of see a menu of different EG values for different models, particularly for massive gravity, which is sort of one of these unpopular models. But it hasn't been a priority just because mainly I want to just improve GR, did the EG first enough for upcoming surveys in order to disprove gravity. And I feel like once we, if GR is ever disproven, then we like use the, do reformulate everything using the next popular model.
Let me ask my question a little bit differently then. Is there a target level of an error bar on EG that is interesting? As small as possible, or is there like if you get down to this level, then it gets really interesting? Or I mean, is there any sense of that?
No. There's not really a strict sense in which it becomes too small. One thing is, I mean, only ultimately thing of getting just get pushed out to have like more than 0.1% effects on larger and larger scales such that we would never see them. Then at that point we wouldn't care anymore, I guess. But that's sort of where that is. I haven't done a full analysis of that. I know no one else think that. So, but that, yeah.
Let's take a good for.